To the second half of the Mishnah on Chav Tes Amud Aleph in Maseches Rosh Hashanah, where the Mishnah says as follows. Very important part of the Mishnah, but we need to do some defining terms to understand what exactly the Mishnah is describing. So the Mishnah tells us by the little letter Gimel, Cheresh Shota V'Katan. Over here we're talking about the mitzvah of Tkiyas Shofar, so when you have a Cheresh, a Shota, or a Katan, when you have somebody who is of those categories, Ein Motzien Es Harabim Yedei Chovason. So even though this Katan knows how to blow the Shofar better than anybody else, even though the Cheresh or the Shota might know how to blow the Shofar better than anyone else, they cannot be the ones to perform the mitzvah on behalf of everyone else. They cannot be the Baal Tokeah. Zeh HaKlal, this is the rule that the Mishnah lays down. Kol She'ena Mechuyiv B'davar, anyone who is not obligated in any given mitzvah, Eino Motzi Es HaRabim Yedei Chovason. That person is not able to fulfill the obligation for others either. They cannot be the Baal Tokeah, they cannot be the Chazan, they cannot be the one who says Kiddush on behalf of everyone else. They have to do, they cannot be the ones to be Motzi anyone else. Now, our Mishnah says here that Acheresh Shota V'Katan, who are all considered to be in one category, are not able to be Motzi Acherim Yedei Chovason. Now the question is, what is the definition of Acheresh in our Mishnah? How do we define Acheresh? What exactly does it mean? So we have in general in Shas, when we reference a cheresh, it's a question in general, what exactly do we mean when we say that? When we say a person is a cheresh and therefore he might or might not be obligated in particular mitzvahs, what exactly are we referring to? So the Gemara says in the beginning of Maseches Chagiga, that from the fact that the Mishnah and Gemara always links together cheresh, shota v'katana, means we're talking about a cheresh that is dumya de shota v'katana, which means we're talking about a cheresh she'eno shomea ve'eno medaber. We're talking about a cheresh that is a not only a deaf person, but somebody who is mute, somebody who has no understanding, no communication. My father likes to say that the Achronim categorize that person as a retarded person. They have no cognitive understanding of anything. So that is the cheresh that generally is described when we say cheresh shota v'katan. They're all in one category. A shota is somebody who's totally deranged, who has no perception of reality. A cheresh, a shota, and a katan are all those people who cannot be motzi acherim yedei chovason. That's what I could have said, because that's what the Gemara says. And Chagiga is generally what we mean when we say the term cheresh. But the problem is that that is not always the case. Not always do we say that when Chazal say the word cheresh, it doesn't always refer to somebody who's completely retarded. It doesn't always refer to somebody who is a eino shomea ve'eino medaber, who has no mode of communication at all, who has no mode of understanding. Because, for example, we have a Mishnah on Chagiga daf Yutes, where the Mishnah says, listen carefully, cheresh shota v'katan, ein motzien acherim yedei chovasam b'mikra megillah. A cheresh shota v'katan cannot perform the mitzvah on behalf of others who need to hear the Megillah on Purim. So what do you mean? If the definition of a cheresh always is that it's somebody who's eino shomea, the eino medaber, we're talking about somebody who cannot communicate at all, who has no cognition, who's totally retarded, they cannot be the ones to do the mikra Megillah either. Is there a different word instead of retarded that we would use nowadays? But developmental disability is not enough. It's very severe developmental. I don't mean retarded in a bad connotation. I just don't know if there's a better way to describe it. Developmental disability could be somebody who has total cognition, just they have some sort of disability. I think retarded really means somebody who has no understanding at all. So there the Mishnah says, when you have a cheresh shota v'katan, they cannot be the ones to read the Megillah for anyone else. What do you mean? How can a cheresh be in that group? A cheresh is somebody who's eino shomea, eino medaber. So obviously you see there that there's already this discrepancy. When Chazal used the term cheresh, it's not clear exactly what they're referring to. Do they mean somebody who's eino shomea ve'eino medaber? Or do they mean someone who is just a person who is deaf? So take, for example, our Mishnah. What exactly does our Mishnah mean when it says that a cheresh is not able to blow the shofar for other people? Who are we talking about? Are we talking about the simple understanding of what a cheresh is? Somebody who's totally retarded, somebody who doesn't understand at all, but somehow figured out how to blow the shofar properly and beautifully? He's the one who's not able to because he's an Eina Mechuyev B'davar? Or are we talking about someone who simply is deaf? They know how to communicate, they are very mentally able, they understand everything, they can communicate with others, but they happen not to be able to hear. And maybe perhaps over here by shofar we have a special halacha that somebody who's not able to hear cannot motzei acherim yedei chovason. Not because he's retarded, not because he doesn't have any mental ability to understand what the mitzvahs are, but rather because he cannot hear, and the ikur mitzvah of shofar is lishma kol ha shofar. So if he can hear, he's not able to be motzi acher mide chavasan. Why group it with the shot of a katan? That's the question. So the Gemara in Chagiga has the basic premise that normally, since we group them together, it means they're all the same. But we just proved from the Gemara Megillah that it's not always the case. Not always is it just because it's lumped together does it always mean the same. And that's the question here. What exactly do we mean when we use the term cheresh? So it's interesting in Shulchan Aruch, in Siman Tavkuf Peites, in Ochas Yamtif, it says there that somebody who hears Tekiyah Shofar from a cheresh hamedaber ve'eno shamea, which means you have a cheresh who has complete cognition, a cheresh who has understanding, who knows how to communicate, but if you hear Tekiyah Shofar from a person like that, lo yatsa yidei chavaso. Lo yatsa yidei chavaso. Which I would not have said if I read the Mishnah simply. That's an added chiddush from our Mishnah. Again, the Mishnah should have been read, if you have a person who's completely retarded, who has no understanding of the mitzvah of Tekiyah Shofar at all, of course he can't be the one to be motzimi. But how do I know that somebody who simply cannot hear, how do I know he cannot be motzimi in the mitzvah either? That, says the Mechaber, is what the cheresh means in our case. That, says the Mechaber, he learns a chiddush in our Mishnah, is what a cheresh means. So again, I find that very interesting that it's not clear in the first place what exactly we mean when we refer to a cheresh, and here would be one of those very great nafkaminas. How exactly do you understand which person is not able to be the Baal Tokeya? Does it mean somebody who's retarded and has no understanding at all, or are we talking about somebody who is not like that? Somebody who does have understanding, somebody who does have cognition, but simply cannot hear. And this is the exception to the rule, because hearing is very important, as we know, l'shmoa kol ha-shofar. In general, when we speak about a cheresh, there's a question that is often raised. It's an unfortunate question. And when you have a parent who struggles with a child who's a cheresh, the real sense of a cheresh, a cheresh she'enu shamea ve'enu medaber, somebody who has no cognition at all, there's unfortunately the question that's raised about whether parents are obligated in the mitzvah of chinuch. Are parents obligated to be mechanech the child who has no understanding and he'll never understand? By normal and natural means, the child will never turn around from this kind of illness. Look, you have some children, you train them enough, they will get used to an idea and they will understand what it is that they're doing. But there are others that really have no understanding at all and will never have an understanding. That's the projection. So why is it that we should have a mitzvah of chinuch? Perhaps the mitzvah of chinuch only applies when the person will one day become a gadol, become a bar chayuva, become to an understanding. So maybe there's no mitzvah of chinuch at all. So that's a question in general. So the Minchas Chinuch and the Bir Halacha Raikli, that when you have a child who's a shota, a child who is totally deranged, who has no understanding, what?
No mental
capacity at all. In that kind of case, the Minchas Chinuch and the Bir Halacha and others write that we have no obligation at all of being mechanech such a child. Again, because it's not going to lead to anything. But the question is, what about when you have a child who's not completely, who has no mental capacity at all, but somebody who clearly has very serious developmental issues, but not really somebody who you would call a shote or a cheresh? So how do you deal with a case like that? And that's a major question. So the Rambam, when the Rambam talks about how we define what a shote or a cheresh is, the Rambam says that it would seem clear that a shote is not somebody who's totally deranged, somebody who's totally, you know, jumping off the rooftops and claiming that he's going to be able to fly to the skies, like, you know, some of the examples that the Gemara gives. But rather, the Rambam says a shote is somebody who is daito kalusha. Somebody whose daito is meshubeshes and muturefa, somebody whose mind is totally convoluted, doesn't have an understanding that's a normative understanding of life. And the Rambam writes, misha nitrefa daito v'nimtzes daito meshubeshes tamid. Somebody who's always confused. Let's say, take for example, unfortunately, if you've had the experience of knowing someone intimately who has dementia, that's what it is. They're always confused. They don't understand what's happening, what day it is, what they're up to, what they're supposed to be doing, what they're not supposed to be doing. Very often that's what happens, unfortunately. We should never know, Rachmana Litzlan. But basically, that's what the Rambam describes as Misha Nitrefa Daito, Umeshubesha, somebody who's totally confused, somebody who has no understanding of what it is that they're doing or what it is that they're supposed to be doing. That's what we would call a Shota, and who's not obligated in the mitzvahs HaTorah, and we're not obligated to be Mechanach such a person. I had somebody in the community ask me a couple of months ago, unfortunately their mother or father, I don't remember who, is living by them and has very advanced stages of Alzheimer's or dementia, and they said that when the TV is on and there's just something moving and stimulating the mind in some way, the parent was at ease. And they were concerned, what do they do about Shabbos? Because they said Shabbos, there's a lot of anxiety and the parent is running around the house and just they couldn't get it under control. I said, absolutely, the parent is a shota. Again, the issue of having a TV on Shabbos in your house is a separate issue of Avsha Milsa. You're not supposed to have things doing malacha in your house that make noise. So designate a part of the house that's going to be only set aside for that parent or for that person. It's not a regular part of the house where the rest of the children are running around. And you have the parents sit there, and when they need to be calmed down, you have the TV. You should run the whole Shabbos in order that it should be done for them. And again, you don't call that to be a malacha being done on Shabbos, because we're talking about, or if they have an aide. So the aide, if they want to turn it on to calm the person down, you don't call that a malacha of Amir La'akam, you don't call that a malacha on Shabbos, because we're talking about somebody who clearly is considered to be a halachic shotet, somebody who has no understanding of what it is that they're supposed to be doing, understanding that today is Shabbos. In a case like that, we don't have an obligation to be mechanech them, or to make sure that a nachri doesn't do malacha for them in a case like that, because they are an absolute shota in that kind of situation.
The obligation of pinah, right? I guess I define that, right? So is that, so if there are specific mitzvot that one wouldn't have to do, so then you have no chiyas to do that? Or
let's say if I'm not a kohen?
Yeah, well, something.
Right, so do my parents have to teach me how to do the avoda? I don't think so. My father has to teach me the Torah, it says. He has to teach me the laws, just because there's a mitzvah of Torah Lishma. Right. But he doesn't have to be mechanech me to do a mitzvah that I'll never do.
Right, so in case of like certain aspects, would they be, not have the fiat of a mitzvah, so that wouldn't happen, but you could have a partial...
Oh, so listen to this. So it's good you raise that, because I think it leads into the next point. Rav Asher Weiss, in the second volume of his Tshuvas, deals a lot with this kind of issue, and he writes about the following. He says, "V'nira od bazeh dihine b'makamacher kasafti es anir la'anias daiti." It's so classic, if you know his style at all. This is so classic of him, with the great sensitivity that he has and the understanding that he has to a cheresh, but at the same time, putting it into halachic perspective. Da'af cheresh shota v'katan diptur min ha-mitzvahs. We talk about a cheresh shota v'katan, and we say they're not obligated to do mitzvahs. Why? Because they don't have the capacity to understand what God is, what a mitzvah is, what Shabbos is. They don't understand what it is. Even though that's true, ein da ela le'in dinim ha-mesurim lanu. He argues that's only with regard to things that we are involved. Let's say a parent has to be mechanech a child to wear tzitzis. So we're not obligated to push the child. If he doesn't want to wear the tzitzis, we're not obligated to do it. He's a chere shota v'katan. He has no understanding. He doesn't have the mental capacity to grasp what it is that we're training him to do. And therefore he says, ein ana mitzuvin l'chafoso l'kayim mitzvos ve'ein ma'anishim oso. And similarly, if he's mechal Shabbos, we don't have a right to punish him. He's going on Shabbos, turning the lights on and off. We don't have to stop him from doing that. When it comes to interpersonal mitzvahs, when it comes to our obligation to him and his obligation to us, we assume there is no obligation. However, he says, when it comes between him and God, when God's going to make the cheshbon to figure out what is this kid supposed to be doing, Asid HaKadosh Baruch Hu al Deus HaBochen Klayus V'Lev, Lishpot kal adam lefi darga sichla v'havanaso. Don't think that a child like that has no relationship with God. Don't think that a child like that won't be held accountable on his own level, on her own level, to God, according to the mental capacity they had, that they had the ability to understand. And if God gave them the ability, again, it's not for a human being to judge, because we don't understand what kind of capacity they have, and what they understand and what they might not. But God is going to have a very intimate conversation with that person to figure out, well, I gave you this and this talent, this and this ability. Did you live up to that? Did you live up to that? And I think it's a very uplifting statement that he has here. I think it's very uplifting, because so often people write off those who might not be having the mental capacity to perform the way others might be able to, but here he's arguing that they have the same relationship with God on their own level. If he darga sichla v'havanaso, heim davak b'tarva mitzvahs k'dabai. God is going to ask him a very pointed question. Did you keep to the Torah mitzvahs on your level that you were able to do so? I gave you a certain amount of cognition, a certain amount of ability. Did you live up to that? Just because you're a cheir shota v'katan doesn't mean you don't have any relationship with God. That's not what it means. And this is what he argues, and he says, v'davar zeh pashut l'anias daiti. He says, this to me is obvious. Why? He argues with the following, because he says, sometimes the definition that the Gemara gives of a shota is somebody who's lan be'beis hakvaros, somebody who goes and digs a grave and sleeps in the be'beis hakvaros. He says the person is completely deranged, he's off balance, he doesn't know what he's doing. So he says, would you go along, if you have a person who's totally a shota, classified, everybody knows, like one of the examples they give is a person who goes around saying they're Mashiach. So you're totally living in a different world, you don't know what's going on. So that person who doesn't have an understanding of who they are, they don't have a perception of what everybody else is, they don't understand that you're not supposed to be sleeping in a grave, somebody who we would all agree is a shota, so something of that nature, Rav Asher said, he argued, would you say that that person now has a right to be Mechal Shabbos and has a right to serve Avodah Zarah? Of course not. Why? Because those things they understand, and this thing they happen to be off about. So again, he's proving his point, that it doesn't mean that a Shota, you write them off, and they're not going to have anything to answer for when God has a conversation with them. They are going to have what to answer, because God gave them certain capacity. God, unfortunately, gave them certain deficiencies that they cannot perform everything like everyone else, but at the same time, doesn't mean they're out of the picture. And I think it's not to put them down. I think it's a very uplifting message that he gives here. And he goes on to say that he was very excited about the Schiddush that he had, and then he found that the Nodi Yehuda argues the same thing. And he says, Shakasav, demasha amru dileka onesh bidei shamayim at shnas hachaf. When we say that a person will not be punished until they're 20 years old because your mental capacity is not at its max until 20 years old, apparently. Eino ela onesh shamayim ba olam hazeh. That only means we don't have a right to be punished in olam hazeh. Avo kol adam ye'anesh ha-maiseh ba'olam ha'elyon. God is going to hold us accountable in His own way. In the olam ha'elyon, gaf katan kol shi'yesh bo ma'ad das. Even when you have a katan who doesn't have a complete understanding, but God at his level did give him some sort of understanding, and you as a child, did you live up to that understanding that you were supposed to have of me? Did you live up to the expectation that I gave you at that young age? That's something even a katan, even a 20, even someone less than 20 is going to have to answer to when they come up in front of the Ribbono Shel Olam himself, which is a very fascinating perspective. And this, I think, is something that... so then he says, so what about chinuch? So what about chinuch? What would he say in a case like that? So he says, no, chinuch is only on things where you're going to have a maisa that has to be done, when you have a maisa that has to be performed. But he says, avol pashit, and he says, when you come to a situation where parents are asking whether or not they have an obligation to be mechanech such a child, rachmana litzlan, he says that when you have a situation like that, look, they're not obligated in the chinuch that we all call chinuch, which is to teach the child to learn how to make brachos, to teach the child how to wear tzitzis and all the other things, because the child will never come to an understanding. But to teach the child that there's something called God, that there is such a concept, to teach the child on their level that there's something that they can hold on to, that they can understand, that, he argues, we would have the biblical obligation to do. That is the real mitzvah of chinuch, as long as the child is on some level of understanding. So that's what he argues. I think it's an interesting point to think about. Something I don't think everybody agrees with, but I think it's an interesting point to consider, and it gives a little bit more of a perspective of what our feeling should be toward the relationship of a Cheresh Shota V'Katan and the Ribbono Shel Olam himself. It's not that they're written off. It's not that they don't have a relationship. They do. Just on their level, they have it. I seem to remember someone once told me that the Chazon Ish was quoted as saying somebody who has Down syndrome or something of that nature is considered to be on a higher madrega than anybody else. Anyone ever heard that?
Yes, I did.
That's what people say. So then I heard later from Talmidim of the Chazon Ish that they said the whole thing is baloney. The Chazon Ish never said it. My father said also he never believed that the Chazon Ish ever said such a thing. Who said? Why do we make such an assumption? So I don't know the Tzadim Lakana Lakan. I don't know what the sources are either way. But I thought it was an interesting point. Whether you believe in such a thing or not, I don't think it should make a difference. Everyone deserves our dignity. Everyone deserves our kavod abrius and our respect. But at the same time, over here, we do see a different element, that they also have a very important role, and it's a relationship that the Ribbono Shel Olam will hold them accountable to on the level that they happen to be. There is a discussion in the Achronim about, I think the first one who discusses it is the Rashash, if I'm not mistaken, in the back of the Gemara Gittin. He says, you know, we always talk about a Cheresh who's Eino Shomea Ve'Eino Medaber, and we consider that person to be totally retarded, has no understanding at all. But he says, I heard that there's a school somewhere in Vienna where they teach these people how to communicate somehow with... It's like amazing. This was like not a common phenomenon. He says he heard there was some school somewhere where they're training the students to try to do such a thing. And that was a major discussion. So now what is the status of a Cheresh? She'enu shomea ve'enu medaber. He happens to be very physically deficient, but totally normal human being. No, not normal, but he totally knows how to communicate with everybody, to live life like everybody else, like the Cheresh of our times. We all know that we have people who cannot speak, who cannot communicate verbally, and they cannot hear, but yet they know how to communicate via a computer, they know how to be like everybody else. So, the Achronim had a major disagreement. Do you still consider the person to be, no, you're branded as a Shota, or do you say no? A Shota only means somebody, or a Cheresh is somebody who cannot be like everyone else, but over here you have somebody who somehow is able to be like everybody else. Now to us, this is not such a surprise. But in those days, this was considered a great surprise. And the Maram Shik argues, it's so fascinating that he says this. Maram Shik was one of the foremost Talmidim of the Chasam Sofer. The Maram Shik writes, yeah, also I heard that in Vienna they have the school. Obviously he never visited there because he didn't know what Vienna was. But he says he heard in Vienna they had the school and they're teaching these kids. But he says the kid is still considered a cheresh. Why? Because it's like taking a parrot and training the parrot to spit back information, even though the parrot, we know, has no understanding of what it is that they're saying. But that's the same thing over here. That's what the Maram Shik argues. So Rav Asher Weiss says, it's very nice that the Maram Shik says that, but it's because the Maram Shik didn't even imagine, he couldn't fathom such a thing, that a school can really teach a person who's Eino Shamei Ve'Eino Medaber, they can teach them how to communicate like everyone else, they can teach them how to function in society. Can't be, must be, at best, they're going to be like a parrot. It's not possible that they really have an understanding. So the Maram Shik couldn't dream of the reality, the miracles that we all see today. You have children who have great developmental disabilities, children who have all sorts of physical ailments, physical problems, and yet they're functioning normally like everyone else. Somehow they're able to. So they have things that hold them back, but for the most part, they're able to be functioning in society like everybody else. And therefore, there is a lot of room to argue that nowadays when we have a system that has proven to be very successful on certain kinds of conditions, we would not consider such a person a cheresh or a shote or anything of that nature, because perhaps we have trained them to the point where they're able to be functioning members of society like everybody else. Again, if they're an Eino Shomea, when it comes back to Tkiyas Shofar, you have what the Beis Yosef said, what the Shulchan Aruch said, that if somebody is not able to physically hear, then they cannot be motzi acher midechal vasam, because the ikara mitzvah by Tkiyas Shofar is l'shma kala shofar. If you can't hear, you're out of the mitzvah. What can you do? Yeah.
Where does Das
play into this? What do you mean?
In terms of if someone has Das, even though they're Eino Shomea and Medaber, is that possible, first of all?
So again, so the assumption of the Gemara is that somebody who's Eino Shomea and Eino Medaber has no Das. It's impossible. But now we know it is possible. And that's exactly the question. Now that we know that a school can teach this person how to develop themselves and how to be functioning and how to have cognition and how to understand certain things about how the world works. So now, you don't say that the person is considered an Eino Bar Das.
It assumes from birth, well, right?
What?
It assumes from birth. It doesn't have the capacity to speak
I guess, yeah. Assume. Which leads us to another issue, and that is, what about somebody who unfortunately is born with a hearing impairment or later on in life, and now they have to get a hearing aid. So what's the story with the hearing aid? Can a person with a hearing aid really fulfill the mitzvah of Tkiyas Shofar or not? Do we consider that to be really hearing, or do we say, no, you're not really hearing anything? That's considered to be something else. So let's say, take for example, there are some people who are not completely deaf. There are some people who are hard of hearing. If they leave the hearing aid out, they'll hear, but it will be very obstructed. If they leave the hearing aid in, they'll hear better, but they're not hearing naturally. So that's a major question that comes up every year. Before Rosh Hashanah, people ask, am I supposed to leave my hearing? I mean, some people ask, some people don't know about it. But the question that is asked often is, I remember when I learned with my father in YU, every single year before Rosh Hashanah, somebody would come in and ask the same question, every year. There was either a boy who came in, his mother, his father, his grandfather, had a hearing aid, and they wanted to know what are they supposed to do for Rosh Hashanah. On the one hand, you can wear the hearing aid and hear the shofar very well. On the other hand, if you take it out, it will be obstructive, but at least you're hearing naturally. So you might not hear as well, but at least you're hearing some of it. So that's the major shiloh, which gets into a discussion. What's the story with hearing aids and what's the story with microphones? So microphones was a major, major shiloh that was discussed by Reb Tzvi Pesach Frank. Microphones was discussed by many others, the Minchas Yitzchak, Dayan Weiss, and it was discussed by Rabbi Avadia Yosef. I am a student of Rav Asher Weiss, who trained me. Again, I would never sell my own, but he trained me that I would never pass judgment on any of those three svarim, but he is one who is able to. And he felt, which my father also agreed to, that when you read through the tshuvas that were written by Rabbi Avadia Yosef on the issue of microphones, as well as the Minchas Yitzchak on microphones, as well as the Reb Tzvi Pesach Frank, it is clear that they had no understanding of what the technological basis of the apparatus is. They had no understanding of what it is. They thought that a microphone is just amplifying the voice that's going into it, which is not the case. That's not what a microphone does. We know that that's not what a microphone does. The microphone duplicates the voice, makes it louder. It does amplify, but it changes it. It completely changes it. So it's clear from the way that they wrote the tshuva that they had no understanding. It's interesting that Rav Asher Weiss once told me that he thinks the greatest contribution to halacha in the last 100 years was Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. Why was he the greatest contribution to halacha? Because Rav Shlomo Zalman taught us that it's important that when you're dealing with a medical shaila, you have to know the medical knowledge before you get involved in the shaila. You don't just talk in abstract. You don't just talk as if you think you know what it is. You have to actually consult with a doctor to find out, is what I'm theorizing really, really the case? And Rav Asher Weiss told me he thought that was Rav Shlomo Zalman's chiddush. Nobody before him used to do that. People used to write medical tshuvas. They had no idea what the actual metzias was of the case. I don't know if you've seen such a thing, but that's what he claimed. And he said that was the same thing. When they started to talk about technology, a lot of people who were writing about it had no idea what technology was. They were thinking that technology was probably something like this. Oh, so electricity is also a major shaila. A lot of people were writing about electricity, but nobody at the time really had a complete understanding of what it was. So that was the question. So Rav Asher Weiss told me once he felt that was the greatest contribution of Rav Shlomo Zalman was not, so to speak, the halacha per se that he gave us, which was great, but it was also this idea that every time a Rav paskens a shaila, he has to know what he's talking about beforehand, which is, to us it sounds obvious, but it's not so obvious. To us it sounds obvious, but it's not so obvious.
Would it be, going back to the case of what you're talking about, the hearing aid and so forth, mm-hmm. where you can hear something, but this helps hear mm-hmm. more, is that like the case in the Gemara of blowing into the hole where
Oh, so Rav Avadia Yosef says the reason why you can use a hearing aid is because that's exactly like the case of the hole. Because let's say you have somebody blowing through a thing and then it just gets louder into the hole. So Rav Avadia Yosef argues it's the same thing, but I don't say he's wrong. Rav Asher Weiss says he's wrong. Why is he wrong? Because that's not what a hearing aid does. The hearing aid doesn't just make the sound louder. The hearing aid changes the sound to be a mechanical sound that sounds very similar to the sound that you heard. So it happens to be, if you understand the metzias, if you understand really the facts of what a hearing aid is and what a microphone is, the shaila is exactly the same. The shaila is exactly the same for both of them. Can we use a microphone for Mikra Megillah, and can we use a microphone for Kriyas HaTorah, and can we use a microphone for all these different things, and can we use a hearing aid for Tkiyah Shofar and for all the different things as well? That's basically the question. Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, what? Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach came out in his Tshuva Svarim that he thought, you cannot use a microphone and that's the end of the story. Why? So Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach discussed it, and the Chazon Ish discussed it as well. And the Chazon Ish, if I'm not mistaken, the Chazon Ish said that since perhaps maybe there's room to be makel, since there's no time delay on a microphone, even though it's changing it, but since there's no time delay and it happens right away immediately, it's not like it takes an extra 5 seconds, it happens right away, maybe we consider that like your actual voice. So Rav Moshe Feinstein deals with it. Everybody deals with the issue. It's a major, major shaila whether or not we considered a microphone to be like the actual voice or not. But basically, that's the same exact shaila as whether hearing aids are considered hearing. The same way a microphone is the shaila, so hearing aids are the very same shaila as well.
What is the basis of having to have the original voice? I mean, it's not somebody else's voice. It's your voice. It's coming from a human. It's not a tape.
Right, so if I'm not mistaken, I think that's what the Chazon Ish wants to argue. This is not playing a tape, it's not playing a video. It's coming directly from the voice. Yeah. The others argued, or Shlomo Zalman argued, what do you mean? But it's not the voice. It's not. It's something that sounds like the voice. It's like playing a tape at the same time.
Right. I can understand the shofar because you're not hearing the shofar now.
Mm-hmm.
But on Mikra Megillah, you're hearing the Megillah. It's just a different type
of voice. If I turn on a tape, you're also hearing the Megillah.
Yeah.
That's what this is like. It's a mechanical tape. It's not the voice itself. Again, this is the discussion. This is the argument. This is the issue. And the question is, now that we have been blessed, that we have something that goes even further than a hearing aid, now that we have cochlear implants where you have the element goes direct, I don't know what you call it, but it goes directly into the eardrum, if I'm not mistaken, correct? Anybody know? I think the cochlear implant goes there. Any doctors here? No? I think, right? Cochlear implant is different than a hearing aid. The hearing aid is something that stays outside of the ear, correct? But the cochlear implant, I think, is something that goes directly in. So there were those who wanted to argue that maybe that's better. Maybe that's better than the hearing aid. But Rav Asher Weiss felt he doesn't see any difference because the cochlear implant is the same thing. Why should there be any difference?
Yeah.
What?
Can you take it out?
Can you take the implant out? I'm not sure why it should make a difference because either way, if you use the cochlear implant, it's mechanically changing the sounds again. The same thing that the microphone is doing and the same thing that. Again, you might not be able to be yotzi, but you might not be obligated. So this is all, it's a complicated question, but it's something that we have to know the metzias of. We have to know what each technological advancement is going to really mean when it comes to the halacha. Let's say Rabbi Avadia Yosef writes in his tshuva, they talk about whether or not you're allowed to use your hearing aids on Shabbos or Yantif. Is it considered a malacha because you're having some machine do a malacha for you? So again, you know, if you're going to say such a thing, we're going to be up the creek. It's going to be a big problem. Everybody who has hearing aids has to walk around on Shabbos and not hear anything. Hard to imagine such a thing, but that's what we have to figure out. So Rabbi Avadia Yosef writes in his tshuva when he's arguing about Shabbos and Yantiv. One second, Rabbi Avadia Yosef writes, well, we all know that that when you talk through a microphone, he says there are nitzotzos esh that come out of it. There are fires that come out of it. So, I don't know. He says that nitzotzos esh come out, yotzim kol shas hadibur. Every time you speak, there's fire that comes out of the microphone. So it's clear that there was some lack of understanding of what the metzius was of a microphone, and therefore it's a question whether or not those tshuvas of Rabbi Avadia with regard to this issue can be relied upon lahalacha nowadays when we have a better understanding of what the mechanism actually is. And that's why Rabbi Shlomo Zalman actually attacked him, and he wrote to him, I'm sorry, I think if I'm not mistaken, Rabbi Shlomo Zalman is quoted in that tshuva itself. Rabbi Shlomo Zalman went to Rabbi Avadia and he said, what are you talking about? That doesn't happen. Look at a microphone. It's just not the case. And Rabbi Avadia wrote that. He incorporated it into the tshuva like, oh, by the way, my friend Rabbi Shlomo Zalman came along and told me that that's not what happened. So now we have to reconsider. Yeah, of course you have to reconsider. So that's an important thing. Again, it seems simple to us that you have to know the metzius before you pass a shaila was perhaps one of the greatest contributions of our generation of Rabbi Shlomo Zalman, that he taught us that that's something you have to be careful about. You have to understand what you're talking about before you say it. Yeah.
The case of the hole.
Yeah.
The assumption.
The hole, what do you mean, the hole?
When you blow the shofar into the hole and the echo comes back, doesn't the Gemara say that?
It's actually Rav Asher Weiss going. Look at that. How do you like that?
Correcting it.
Yeah. We'll call him back. Yeah. Yeah.
That it's only, you can only be Yotze if you first hear part of it, not the echo, but you first hear.
He's in America. It's not 3 o'clock in the morning. Yeah.
You don't belong.
Yeah. No. Yeah.
So that's not a situation of a microphone. That's a situation of an echo. It's dead. It's apparently your call coming back, but it's still not okay unless you hear part of it first.
The original source.
Right. The original source. So if you're dealing with a hearing aid, in other words, it's irrelevant whether it's a mechanical or a disfigurement of the voice itself or it's some amplifier. That's not the point. The point is if you can hear on your own without the use of the hearing aid, which is not that well, that should be sufficient because you're hearing call by itself.
Right, so then you should leave the hearing aid out. So then you should take it out.
But having it in doesn't change the fact that you can still hear it.
Why not? Now you're hearing an obstructive sound.
You would hear it otherwise anyway.
You would, but you're not.
Who says you're not?
When the hearing aid is in, I would imagine...
It doesn't block the sound, but it changes it.
So now you have something else shouting into your ear. You don't have
the echo case.
No, the echo case. The Gemara says you have to hear im kol havarasham. If you only hear the echo, then you're not yotze.
Only hear the echo.
Right, but if you hear the regular part, you are yotze.
Right.
But over here, you don't hear the regular part. You have someone else shouting at you at the same time with a different sound. Yeah, that's the problem. So that's the Mishnah over here. It's a very interesting Mishnah. And it's a very important one, but it gets back to the issue of how do we define a cheresh in halacha? What exactly does it mean when the Mishnah talks about a cheresh? Do we mean somebody who's generally considered to be retarded, somebody who has no cognition, no understanding at all? And we don't mean that as a derogatory term, it's just the best way to say it, I think. Somebody who has no cognition at all, that's a cheresh, who's pater min ha-mitzvos. Or do you say, no, over here the Mishnah is saying an out of chiddush. Even if you have someone who does understand, somebody who does know what the mitzvos are, and somebody who does know what God is, but still, in the end of the day, since the person is not able to hear, we consider that person to be an eina mechuyah bedavar, and therefore, eina motzi acherim yedei chavasam. That's basically the question that comes out of this Mishnah. Either way, the rule that the Mishnah sets forth is, if you're not a mechuyah bedavar in any mitzvah, if you're not obligated to do a given mitzvah, you are not able to help other people to do that mitzvah either. Says the Gemara as follows, Chavtes Amar Aleph. All that was just a short introduction for this Gemara. Tarabanan. Seems to happen quite often. Hakol Chayav Mitkiya Shofar. Hopefully it was interesting. Hakol Chayav Mitkiya Shofar. Everyone is obligated to blow the shofar. Kohanim, Levim, Yisraelim, Gerim, Vavadim, Shechoram, Tumtum, Vandroganis. Everyone is obligated to blow the shofar, even a Tumtum. What's a Tumtum? Tumtum means somebody who we don't know if he's a Zachar or a Nekeva because the reproductive organs are covered over. What is that called in medicine?
Androgynous.
No. Androgynous is the next case. Androgynous is something who has, what do you call it? Ambiguous genitalia, I think we call that, right? That's an androgynous. What do you call a tumtum in medicine?
Hermaphrodite.
What is it called?
Hermaphrodite.
Yeah. But nowadays we can do a surgery to just remove the skin, whatever's in the way, right? I would imagine. No? Is there such a thing as an androgynous nowadays? No? I don't know. Okay. So all those people are obligated in the mitzvah of tkiyas shofar. Misha chetzi avad v'chetzi men chorin. So the Gemara says, tumtum, the problem is, even though these people are obligated in the mitzvah, however, a tumtum, who's a safek zachar, safek nekeva, we don't know the story, eina motzi lo asmino v'lo sheino mino. He's not able to be motzi a tumtum, who's exactly like him, and he's not able to be motzi somebody else, who's a complete male. Androgynous, motzi asmino avalo sheino mino. So there's a major difference between a tumtum and an androgynous. An androgynous is somebody who we consider to have characteristics of both. He's a zachar and a nekeva. The tumtum is somebody who, we don't know what the story is. You're a suffix zachar and a suffix nekeva, and therefore when you have a tumtum who's a suffix zachar and a suffix nekeva, he's not able to help anybody. He can't even blow for another tumtum because maybe you're a nekeva and that one is a zachar, and women are not obligated in the mitzvah of tkiyas shofar. Why? Mitzvah seisha zman grama. So if this tumtum is a nekeva and the other tumtum is a zachar, so you're not able to be motzi in the mitzvah because you're not obligated to do it. Again, women can perform the mitzvah, but since they're not obligated to, they are not able to be motzi other people in the mitzvah either. So therefore, a tumtum cannot be motzi another tumtum, and he certainly cannot be motzi another zachar, because the zachar is certainly obligated, and this person is only a suffix being obligated. So here, let's just take a break for a minute, because I want to talk about, I gave this out 2 weeks in a row, let's hope we get to it now. What time is it? Okay, I'm not giving it out next week, especially I'm not going to be here next week. Should write that down. Not going to be here next week, take that into account. But the next week, hopefully, I will be back if the strikes on the airlines decide to open up. So we discussed the following. We have a din of Safik d'Oraisa l'Chumra, Safik d'Rabbanan l'Kula. This is a very famous principle, and again, we all know that there's a machlokas, the Rambam and the Ramban. How do you understand this principle? Why is it that Safik d'Rabbanan l'Kula, if the Rambam argues that perhaps every din d'Oraisa is really not only the d'Oraisas, but it also includes all the dinim d'Rabbanan as well, because the lav of lo sasser is all-inclusive, all-encompassing, and it includes everything. So then why do we say that you have the right to be makel by a din d'Rabbanan when it's the Safik? Why should it be makel? It's the same as a din d'Oraisa. It should be exactly the same rules, and he shouldn't have the right to be makel. So that's the question that the Ramban asks on the Rambam. We won't get into it now because it is not really so important to get into all the aspects of Safik d'Rabbanan l'Kula. But based on the din of Safik d'Rabbanan l'Kula, we have a couple of major issues. One is the following. Would we rely on a Safik d'Rabbanan l'Kula even the Chatchila? Would we rely on a Safik d'Rabbanan l'Kula even the Chatchila? Or do we say, no, that's only b'di'evit? Meaning, you get yourself into a situation, and now you realize, oh, I got involved in a Safik d'Rabbanan, and now ex post facto you realize what happened. So do we say, oh, Safik d'Rabbanan l'Kula, don't do it again anyway? Let's say, you're not sure if you daven today, right? So davening tefillah, often we assume is only d'Rabbanan, correct? So since you say Safik brachas l'hakel or Safik d'Rabbanan l'Kula, so don't go ahead and daven again. Is that only b'di'evit, or do you say, even the chatchila, you have a right to rely on Safik d'Rabbanan l'Kula? Let's see an example of what I mean, and you'll see exactly what we're talking about. Look in Shulchan Aruch, number Dalet. Shulchan Aruch Arachayim Hilchas Tzitzis. The Mechaber writes as follows. Malbushim Shem Psuchim Min Hatzdamamata. So the Mechaber over here is describing something that he only could have imagined, but nowadays it's very prevalent. You have the tzitzis that are the undershirt tzitzis. So the undershirt tzitzis are psuchim lamata. They're open on the bottom, they just have sewing underneath the armpit, but then the rest of it is open. Yesh lam dalad kamfas letzad mata. They have, the undershirt tzitzis have dalad kamfas on the bottom, ulamala haim stumim. But on the top, they're all closed off. That's exactly what we have. Im rubo sasam, if most of the side of the tzitzis is closed off and it's considered like an undershirt, then putter, that's not obligated in tzitzis, because you have to have a beggar that has two corners in the front, two corners on the back. If most of it is going to be sewed together, that's not considered to be a four-cornered garment, even if it does square off on the bottom. Im rubo pasuach, if most of it is opened, if most of it is split, then we assume that chayiv. Am I describing this well? I think the undershirt tzitzis is perfect. That's exactly what the Mechaber is talking about. Chetzio sasam v'chetzio pasuach. Let's say you have exactly half of the side is sewn together, and half of it is open. So what do you say? In a case like that, basically you're saying it's a suffix whether or not you chayv in tzitzis. So there we say, matilin oso l'chumra v'chayv b'tzitzis. Why not? Tzitzis is a din d'araisa, it's a mitzvah d'araisa, suffix d'araisa l'chumra. You have a suffik, meaning I would have said just cut the beged a little bit. But we're not talking about the undershirt tzitzis. We're talking about, obviously, it's a fancy piece of clothing. You don't want to just cut it, right? So in a case like that, the Shulchan Aruch says, chayiv b'tzitzis, you have to put tzitzis on it l'chumra, because suffik deraisa l'chumra, but at the same time, ein yotzim bo b'shabbos. You're not allowed to wear that article of clothing on Shabbos. Why not? Why not? Because that's considered hotzah on Shabbos. That's considered carrying a beged outside on Shabbos. That might not be really a beged of tzitzis. So you don't have a right to wear that on Shabbos. So the Magen Avraham points out the following. Not only do we assume you're not allowed to wear that beged of tzitzis, which is a suffik, chayiv and tzitzis, suffik not, not only do we assume that you're not allowed to wear that into Rishus HaRabim, but you're also not allowed to wear it into a karmelis midrabanan. You're also not allowed to wear it into a Rishus HaYachin midrabanan. Why not? Why can't you wear it into Rishus HaYachin midrabanan? At worst, it's a suffik rabban lakula. I'm wearing this beged. I'm not sure if it's chayiv and tzitzis or not. So I might be carrying the tzitzis outside, but at worst I'm violating a din derabanan. I'm carrying a place which is only us the derabanan to carry. Safi derabanan lekula. Go carry it. Go wear it. What's the problem? And what you see from here is what?
Right.
That we don't say safi derabanan lechatchila. Safi derabanan lekula would not apply here. Why? Because it's before the fact. You know that you're about to go outside and you have a beged on you that's a suffik chayiv and tzitzis, suffik not chayiv and tzitzis. Why get involved in the shaila? Why rely on the principle of suffik derabanan lekula? You don't have a right to do that. Suffik derabanan lekula just dictates that after the fact, you can rely on something that suffik derabanan lekula, it's as if it was done. So that's one example. And a second example is over here. Tumtum in the midst of tkiyah shofar, our Gemara says, the tumtum, who's a suffik zachar, suffik nekeva, we don't know the story about this person. He or she, Heshi they call him, is not able to, it's not so funny, but okay, the tumtum is not able to be motzi acher midei chavasan. Why? Because we're not sure if it's a boy or a girl. And if it's a woman, the woman is not obligated in the mitzvah, so she cannot go ahead and be mekayim the mitzvah for a man. So the Shulchan Aruch quotes this halacha not only by our case of tkiyah shofar, which is a mitzvah daraisa, but the Shulchan Aruch quotes it even by Mikra Megillah. Mikra Megillah, you cannot have a tumtum be the one to read the Megillah for all of us. Why not? At worst, what are we talking about? We're talking about Mikra Megillah, which is only a chiyuv midrabanan, correct? Chiyuv derabanan. So why don't you say safi derabanan lekula? Allow this person. He's an amazing baal kore. He knows how to read the Megillah inside out, back and forth. He has a loud voice. He's going to project through the whole shul without the microphone, without the hearing aids. Everyone's going to hear him. What better can be done than that? Says the Shulchan Aruch, no, you're not allowed to have a tumtum not only blow the shofar, but you're not allowed to have him or her read the Megillah either. Why not? Why don't we rely on Safi Derabanan Lekula? Safi Derabanan Lekula, we're talking about mitzvah midrabanan of Mikra Megillah. Safi Derabanan Lekula should dictate that the tumtum is allowed to read the Megillah for us. And the answer to that is very simple. The reason why is because that's only b'dieved. That's only if the tumtum already was the one who lain, and then later on we find out he was the one who read the Megillah. So we say, Safi Derabanan Lekula, okay, he did it. We're not sure what the story is. No reason to go back and do it again. But lechatchila, you're going to rely on the principle of Safi Derabanan Lekula lechatchila and tell the tumtum to go ahead and read the Megillah for everybody else when we're not sure if the person is actually obligated. In a case like that, we really should not rely on Safi Derabanan Lekula. And that's, again, a very important chiddush that comes out from this Gemara. If I just read the Gemara on itself, I would say, maybe this is only limited to the case of tkiyah shofar. Why? Because tkiyah shofar is a mitzvah d'araisa. By a mitzvah d'araisa, we say safik d'araisa l'chumra. But I would have said perhaps by mikra megillah, which is only a mitzvah d'rabanan, maybe I should say there that I have a right to rely on safik d'rabanan l'kula. So the answer to that, the achronim say, is no. We would not apply it there, and that's why the Shulchan Aruch says a tumtum is not permitted to be the one to lay the megillah on Purim, even though our obligation is only midrabanan. Why? Because we assume that safik derabanan lekula is only to be used b'dieved, but it's not something that we should rely on even lechatchila. Okay, so Mirtz Hashem.